I'm Sister Beth Murphy. Today, my guests will share their impressions of the month-long Synod on Synodality that concluded in Rome at the end of October. Sister Mila Diaz-Solano and Sister Barbara Blessy served as members of our community's ad hoc committee on the Synod. In the spring of 2022, which feels like a long time ago, they assisted with creating a series of Synod listening sessions, which included all our sisters, many of our associates, and the student preachers and board members of our high schools. We offered those who work with us at Sacred Heart Convent an opportunity to share their insights as well. The results of these meetings made up the report that we submitted to the Dicastery on the Synod in Rome. So the input from our sisters and friends was made present to the Synod Assembly that happened in Rome last month. Now that the first assembly on the Synod has passed, I asked our Synod Task Force members whether they would share their impressions of what happened there, what they're excited about, and what they think might happen between now and the next assembly in October 2024. And Sisters Mila and Barbara were so gracious to say yes. So welcome to both of you.
Thank you. Good morning.
Thank you, Beth, for the invitation.
And thanks to both of you. So let's get started with your general impressions. I know that it was a month-long synod, and it was difficult for us in the midst of our busy lives to take the time to pay attention to what was happening in Rome in October. But what were you able to pay attention to, and what were your first impressions about what was happening there? And maybe, Sister Barbara, you could start for us.
Well, I have to say that the more I read, it really instilled in me an excitement for what was going on. In fact, I was envious of all the people that were able to be around those tables. And I think that was one of the things that was most impressive to me, is that everyone was gathered in a round table setting with a combination of people from various parts of the world, different levels of authority. So there were bishops and cardinals and lay people and facilitators, all kinds of people at the same table. All of that was very encouraging for me. And I just got very excited when I heard about that. Also, the whole idea of using the latest advancement in technology to make the communication, fuller and richer, and that everybody could understand because it was simultaneously translated in various languages. All of that was just very exciting for me. And as I said, I was really envious of not being able to be there myself, because I just was imagining how that dynamic would have been.
Yes, thank you. How about you, Sister Mila?
Well, very close to the date of the 1st of October, I was really excited about this assembly, and I made a purpose of praying every morning with whatever prayer was happening in Rome, because it was live streamed. And so for me, just starting from the vigil, the ecumenical vigil, was really a way of engaging in that desire or thirst for unity, not only among the whole Catholic Church worldwide, but also with other Christians and with other people of other faiths who are also walking together in this world, trying to find the best of themselves and of their members, impelling everybody to work for the common good and for the greatness of the common home. So for me, the first highlight was the vigil. The second one was the retreat that all the members who were participating at this assembly, the 16 assembly, participated. Some of the reflections offered by Timothy Radcliffe, our brother, a Dominican brother, were really powerful and humbling, and I think set the tone for the way the people participated during this assembly. I know it was not a custom for many bishops to have round tables and sharing their perspectives with lay people, with women, with people from other parts of the world, engaging with cultural diversity, with the diversity of languages, etc. But I think it was the presence of the Holy Spirit every day through the prayer and through the moments of silence, and that made possible this assembly to have been accomplished for that long. So I think the same way that Barbara expresses the round tables were just an image of what the Catholic Church must be, you know, in all places, not only in Rome, but in the local parishes and the diocesan experiences or discernments, and in any local community of the Catholic Church.
Oh, thank you. And you know, I would be in agreement with both of you. So we have just established the fact that the three of us are big fans of the Synod, and we were very excited about what happened there. But I'm guessing that so many of our listeners might not really know. So could one of you, and either one, give us just a little synopsis. I know that's difficult, but briefly, what is a synod and what happened at the synod assembly, other than these retreats and our experience of sitting with the cardinals and the bishops at round tables? What else was going on?
Well, I could take a try at this. Synods, historically, since Vatican II anyway, have been gatherings of bishops only, pretty much, clergy only. And they've been kind of hierarchical in nature and pretty much focused on doctrine and teachings of the church. And this synod was very different. You know, the Pope invited us to enter into it in a synodal way. And really the purpose of this synod was to learn how to operate in a synodal way. And, you know, lots of us had hopes that there would be answers to life's questions about this or that issue or struggling that we're having out in the trenches. But it really was an opportunity for us to learn from one another how to do the synodal thing. And I think that was one of the perhaps most challenging things to take place. And yet it was the dynamic that brought the most joy among the people that were there, from what I understand. And it was also a way of minds and hearts opening up to the experiences. And I want to underline that word experience. It's not just thoughts and ideas that were shared, but I think the people brought their experience to the table, and those who were listening intently could benefit from that. One of the articles I read talked about how after the sharing would begin, that after about every third or fourth person, there would be a time of silence where people could just sort of drink in what they had heard and perhaps notice where the Spirit was moving. So that was encouraging for me, that there was this prayerful, intentional listening and a deepening of listening. And so it wasn't just listening so that I could prove you wrong in the next sentence and I could tell you what's the right way to approach something, but rather a listening for understanding and being in solidarity with you from your experience. It's a whole different way of dialogue rather than just, you know, taking care of business. That's my initial thought about synods and how this one was different.
And what I will add is that this synod started in 2021. It was different because it engaged the whole church at the local level. We started with the conversations in the spirit for what the church wanted in the local parishes, in the small communities, and wherever Catholics gathered with other, even with other members of other churches. So it started in 2021. It was a process, and it's still a process. This was like the third step. No, the first one was in the local level. Then the second engagement was more diocesan and continental. So all the experiences that happened in the local level were drawn into a more larger, we'll say, circle. And then this gathering in Rome, which is the first gathering, engaged all the continents, embraced the process from the beginning. And this is just the first conversations that happen, and the second one will happen next year. And what is the hope between now and next year's assembly is that, again, all that experience that Barbara is talking about will return to the local level. How do we engage in dialogue after what we have seen through the press conferences or through the media about this document, and when we read the document in our local churches? So how do we make it alive into the spaces that we are? It's not just expecting that they will go back next year and we will see what happened, but this is a synod that engages all times at all levels to all the baptized.
Mm. You know, there was an article, and I've been reading so much, I don't even remember where, but there was an interview with Cardinal McElroy from Southern California and Cardinal Blaise Supich, who's our metropolitan here in Chicago. And both of them agreed that they could never again participate in a meeting that was only bishops. They said that this experience changed them so much. And so, Sister Mila, when you talk about, you know, what's going to happen between now and October, I think in part that's going to be up to the local ordinaries, the local bishops, to see how they're going to move forward in disseminating the results of the synod report from this, I should say the synod assembly report from this gathering, and what is going to happen. But if Cardinals McElroy and Supich are any indication, we can hope for good things. Do you think that's so?
Yes, it's a sign of hope, because they have experienced what it means to be seated at a table with diverse voices, with women, with people who are not from your own region, from your own culture, and how it is to listen attentively to their experiences, to their theological perspective, to their desires for the better of the church. How do we want to be present in this world? So I think that experience is going to be carried to the local level, and how they are going to engage now in dialogue to their clergy, those who are members of the diocese assembly, deacons, priests, and also consecrated people, lay and men and women and the youth. And especially, how do they invite the diversity of the population in the area where they live? So I think that is the experience that they have learned, the richness that brings to be seated with such a diversity that can also happen at the local level. Because in our cities, in our diocese, we have so many diverse voices that sometimes are lost in just trying to make decisions the fastest way and engaging those who are closer, but not engaging in a long process that will bring diverse voices. Mm-hmm. I think this was a moment of conversion for many of the bishops, not only for Supich or McElroy, but for so many of them who were not accustomed to these kinds of conversations.
And yet, you'll excuse me for a minute, Sister Barbara, I haven't forgotten that you're with me, but there's a precedent for this that was set by the church in Latin America. And early on in the synod process, we did an issue of Just Words that focused on what did synodality look like for our sisters in Peru? And I'd like you to address that, Mila, because I think there's a model that exists in Latin America that the rest of the bishops' conferences around the world might actually learn something from. Could you talk a little about that?
Sure. You know, in Latin America, there are several churches that have the practice of gathering diverse voices for engaging the mission of the church or the presence of the Catholic Church in the society and to respond the needs of the times. So these kinds of gatherings happened before for the Synod of the Amazon, for example. And diverse indigenous communities were invited into the table to give their voices. And members of the diocesan church and also some other organizations that work in the society who can, alongside with the Catholic Church, respond to the urgent needs of the area. So we have been happening these kinds of conversations in our diocese in Huancayo, for example, and we also engage for the Synod of the Amazon. And out of these experiences, the Ecclesial Conference of the Amazon was born, the SEAMA. And there are already, this conference doesn't engage just bishops, but it's the whole laity also involved in these conversations, and especially indigenous communities, because whatever decision is taken or whatever direction the church takes, it will have consequences on the indigenous community. So we have to hear the voices of those who are involved in our decisions. So I think there is a richness that was brought by the this kind of practice, and also the experience of the Synod of the Youth previously in 2018 was one of the precedents for this synod as well.
Mm-hmm. And to me, that's such a beautiful and hopeful thing to hear. You know, Sister Barbara, we are, and Sister Mealy, we all three of us know this quite well, that our community is in the process of preparing for our chapter. So a chapter is a meeting held by religious congregations of men and women every so many years to renew our commitment to our mission and to look at steps going forward. And that is, and frankly, in some level, has always been historically what we would call a synodal process. So what I'm noticing for this chapter preparation, however, is that we are really very intentionally moving forward using a synodal process as we do our preparation for general chapter. So I would love, Sister Barb, if you wouldn't mind, to talk to us a little bit about how our chapter preparation is its own kind of synodal process and, you know, where we are going.
Well, and I would like to start with one of the points that Mila was just making about how the practice has grown in bringing to the table the people that are most affected, the people that will suffer the consequences of whatever decisions are made. And I think that's an important element that we have in community when we're gathering together for chapter two, that we always go to the people, the sisters, and also make sure that their voices are heard and that we're not just talking about them like another group of people, but rather we're hearing from them, we're hearing from their experience. So I think that's something that's been very clear so far with our chapter planning committee, that the ways they have designed are coming together on Zoom calls, and we're going to be and we've begun to come together in person, that we are really listening from one another's experience and taking that into consideration. I just think that's really important. And as you point out, we have, as community, as a member of the Dominican Order, as a religious, we have been practicing a synodal way of dealing with life and our community life for years, centuries even, right?
Mm-hmm.
When we've been faithful to it, you know, sometimes we get off the track, but other times we really try to be more focused and really, really do what we're called to do. So I just think that as we look at various issues within our congregation in terms of the next 5 years or so, we need to just remember that the process is really important too, and always bring to the table those who will be affected by any decisions, and always include at the table. There might be some quiet people there that don't have much to say, but kind of insist in a gentle, loving way that they do speak up, because everybody's baptized in that room. Every one of us have a take on the wisdom that of the Holy Spirit working among us, and that needs to be brought forth. So we need to be very inclusive in our coming together as well. That's kind of what I'm looking at in terms of preparation for chapter.
Mm, thank you for that. And I think it's important to note that the Synod in Rome, very much as our chapter body, those of us who are delegates to chapter and who will be voting on proposals that we make next spring, this is a consultative process. It's not a decision-making body. So I'm sure that the two of you heard, as I did, people who were hearing early reports about what happened at the Synod Assembly were disappointed because this decision wasn't made, or that decision wasn't made, or they had hoped more would be said about that thing, whatever it was. And what we need to remind each other is the Synod is not a decision-making body. The Synod is a consultative body. And as Sister Mila pointed out a minute ago, this was only the first of two Synod assemblies. So it won't be until after next October, when the Synod makes another report, that these reports go to Pope Francis for his consideration. Within our religious community, it's a slightly different model, I would say, because we say that our general chapter is the highest governing body in the community. So the decisions that we make together in our synodal process as a community are then implemented by the women that we elect to leadership. They do not have the option of not doing those things. Their authority rests on the chapter, whereas with Pope Francis is slightly different. Pope Francis is the final word here, and the Synod is consultative only. Any other thoughts about that either of you would like to mention?
One of the things that I found very enriching with the final document was that it had, for each topic that was addressed, it had a section for further consideration, and then I think it said proposals. And I think that within our congregation, when we have our chapters every 5 years, we're kind of programmed to do this, and we're a much smaller group, right? We're not we are international with our Peruvian sisters, but we are not, in terms of numbers, as large as the Catholic Church. So we can move more quickly on certain things and give our consent more immediately than something that might be considered on a worldwide level. And I just think that's one of the factors that plays into this, even though I do understand what you're saying,
yeah,
Beth.
Surely, yeah. Sister Mila, I think you were going to say something too.
Yeah, I wanted to share that, you know, as a congregation, we have come from a long evolutionary process to become more synodal in our practices, in our structure, in our way of being, in our missionary work, etc. So we have evolved because at some point in our history, our way of being was also hierarchical. There was a decision made by some of the members without much of consultation. But I know that the difference for us was the chapter was always the maximum authority. which is different in the whole Catholic Church. And we have to understand the difference in cultures, the difference in viewpoints, perspectives, etc. So we are not working just, we are not walking together just in a one geographical area or one body, but worldwide, a planetary perspective. And of course, the Catholic Church has evolved as well in its practices. And this, how I see it, is an evolution from the time of Vatican, the Second Vatican Council. This is one of the evolving moments of the Catholic Church in which we are implementing what we were called to be in the Second Vatican Council. So synodality and the synod is not something that will threaten the way that the Catholic Church is organized and how it functions as a church, but it will probably challenge some of the practices and the structures, and it will, I hope, it will evolve eventually into being more participative. No, this is not just to hear from the perspective of people, but to hear from what is God calling us to be at this point in our history as a church. So much of the work is of the Holy Spirit, and I have seen during the synod the times that they have given to prayer, to silence, to settle some of the perspective that were conflicted. And the document in itself shows it. No, there are some points of convergence. So there are some matters that need to be developed and need to be deepened into more conversations in the local level, go back to the local level and have these conversations and how do these look like in our own area. So how can we walk as a unified church, not in uniformity, but in our diversity as well? So I see the evolution, and I have hopes for the evolution as well in our Catholic Church.
Thank you, both of you. That is very hopeful. I saw an interview with Sister Natalie Beckart, who is the French sister who was the deputy director of the dicastery on the synod. And she said that there's no need to wait for the next synod assembly, that local churches could start right away, if they wished, implementing some of the ideas and the proposals of the synod. And I found that such a beautiful, open, and energizing comment. Because it does exactly what you have just spoken about. It enables the people of God in our local churches to begin walking together, which is what the word synod means, right? To begin walking together immediately, becoming more and more the church that God, the Holy Spirit, that Jesus has called us to be for millennia. So I found that quite thrilling, and I'm looking forward to seeing as the synod report gets unpacked in our local dioceses, what that's going to mean for the church in the United States and Peru in particular, because those are places that we care about, but throughout the world as well. Would either of you like to add a final thought before we wrap up for today?
This is Barbara. I think I'd like to just add a couple of things that have come from my own experience. I recently facilitated a retreat down in Baton Rouge, and one of our sisters said to me, don't forget the synod, don't forget the synod, even though that had nothing to do with the scriptures that we were dealing with that day. But I did. I remembered the synod, and I talked to the group. They weren't all Catholic, but I said, in the Catholic world, this is what's happening, and I kind of described the process, etc. And then I asked them to kind of be synodal in the way they approached the day of the retreat and how they could, in their small groups, as they shared with one another, we did it in a prayerful kind of pausing kind of way. And, you know, what are you hearing? Where do you see the Spirit at moving and that kind of thing? So all I'm saying with this is that we have some opportunities at our fingertips where we can use the language of synodality and name it for people so that people get a lot more familiar with and comfortable with a non-threatening way of embracing the whole synodal method. Another thing that happened to me is that I have the privilege of being on a diocesan board right now, and I'm very new at it. But one of the things that the board members are required to do is every year we have to visit two sites that benefit from the money that's allocated from this board. And so I have made those two visits. And at each of the visits, I had the opportunity to say to the people, well, look, you know, we're in synod right now. It was happening last month. I said, we're in synod as a church right now, and you are already acting in a synodal way, in the way that you collaborate with one another, you know, in your staff and that. And then the other opportunity was somebody said, well, you know, we decided that this kind of a commission isn't needed. We couldn't see how it would be practical for us. But I do, the person was saying to me, but I do want to know what everybody's doing out there. So I suggested that, you know, well, it is a synodal thing to invite people in their diverse ministries to share best practices or whatever it is. So create a different kind of commission, if you want to call it a committee, a gathering of people, whatever it is, but encourage that synodal kind of sharing and benefit from that then for your own ministry. So all I want to say is that I think there's all kinds of opportunities where it can rise to the surface, and we can begin at the local level of helping people to see a different way of operating in the church, and a rich way of operating.
And what can I say is that I am not part of a diocesan organization, but as a theologian, I also feel the challenge from now until the next assembly to contribute wherever I am called to into this formation of what it means to be a synodal church. In any teaching opportunity that I have, and also in drawing some of the reflections. For example, when there is one area that talks about how the confirmation, the sacrament of confirmation, needs to be seen in light of bringing up the charisms and the different gifts that people have to be a mature member of the Catholic Church. In light of that, how can we develop a catechetical formation for confirmation that draws us this commitment for the people who are preparing for this sacrament? How can we include in the formation of baptism also the the idea of what it means to be part of the sensum fidei, no? These people of God that have some of the seeds from the truth of God that oblige us or request from us our commitment to be part of any engagement that the Catholic Church is having. So I think at the different levels, also either as a in a diocesan organ setting or in a classroom, how teachers who are teaching in a classroom can talk about the synod and practice the synod in their own classroom so that the students will see a different way of being together, of walking together and being engaged with what is happening in the world. And I think this this assembly and the document is giving us, to all of us, the opportunity to be challenged and to learn more about the synod, not only by learning or memorizing what it is in the document, but practicing and experiencing.
Thank you for that, Mila. You pointed out the catechetical and the formative content of the synod report, and I too found that fascinating and hopeful. It's not only about formation for catechesis, but at all levels, I guess I should say, from children who are preparing for their first communion to seminarians who are preparing to lead congregations as ordained ministers. So we all need that formation in what it means to be a synodal church. And it's exciting that that can happen and will begin to happen. I can hardly believe that our time is already out. This has been a fascinating conversation, and I could talk with the two of you for hours about this and probably will at some other point. But for today, I just want to say thank you. Thank you for sharing your wisdom and your enthusiasm for the Synod, your deep knowledge, and your personal commitment to the life and the development and the future of the Catholic Church. It's truly a joy to hear both of you. So thank you so much.
Thank you. I enjoyed being a part of it. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much for this opportunity. And I encourage everybody to deepen into what happened in Rome this October and what will happen in their own local communities.
Thank you to both of you. And thanks to our listeners for tuning in to Flowcast. In the show notes for this episode, you will find all the resources Sister Mila and Sister Barbara mentioned, links to Father Timothy Radcliffe's retreats, the English and the Spanish versions of the final synod report, several other synod summaries, and the link to the synod website where you can learn more about the synod and follow its progress. Please do check out the show notes. On behalf of the Flowcast team, Brandon Durham, Jean Ann Miller, and myself, Sister Beth Murphy, thank you so much for listening. Remember that the Flow in Flowcast is an acronym for the life of the world. Just as Jesus gave his life for the life of the world, we are each called to do the same. Thank you, and God bless.